powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
It is Tuesday on Jake and Stacy, and that means the dugout is going to be from 1 to 2 p.m. Scott Service going to join us to kick that off, just like he does every single day. And then we're going to have all Mariners for the entire hour. Don't worry, though. We're still going to get some Mariners talk in before then, but very excited for our guests in that hour, led off by the skipper himself, Scott Service. Gary Hill Jr. and Shannon Dre are also joining us. We're going to get to some Seahawks talk. I do still want to start with Mariners, though, because, Jake, poor Chris Flexen. Poor Chris Flexen. He doesn't deserve it. I've never seen anyone less deserving of a 1-6 start to the season in my life. Chris Flexen getting little to no run support. The Mariners scored 2 yesterday. Flexen has a 1-6 record. He's received 7 runs total in 7 starts, 4 of those coming in that win over the Royals, and he was shut out during 4 of his starts.
Yeah, absolutely brutal. I mean, you feel for Chris Flexen because, honestly, outside of the 2 home runs that he gave up, I know he gave up another earned run later on in the game, but, I mean, he pitched very, very well and gave this team a chance to stay in it. And, you know, it just is amazing. Unfortunately, Chris Flexen is getting hit with bad luck with this offense, that they aren't giving him any run support for the most part. And you know, I think that Chris Flexen has been everything that they have hoped that he would be going into year 2 in terms of being consistent and being the type of pitcher that he was a season ago. The only difference was is that Chris Flexen was more of the beneficiary of having run support during his starts, and he has not had that luck so far this season. But it was tough to watch that, Stacy, and it was also tough to watch Kikuchi on the other side.
That it was. Let's talk about Flexen for just one more second, because I want to talk about the Mariners' offense and how they performed against Kikuchi. First of all, Scott Service himself noting it's been tough being able to find help for Flexen on offense.
Actually, I thought Chris Flexen's stuff was about as good as we've seen this year. I thought he was pretty sharp. Obviously, he made a couple mistakes on the home run balls, but other than that, I thought he threw the ball really well. You know, we didn't do anything offensively for him. We've really struggled to give him much run support. Don't know why, no explanation for it. It's just been a struggle there.
He's not exaggerating when he says they didn't do anything offensively. Like, there was a moment there, they had a bases loaded situation with one out in the top of the fourth, and then in the seventh, you have Abraham Toro with a shallow fly out to right. Then you have Ty France, bases loaded. And if I were to choose one Mariners player where it's like, okay, bases loaded, who do you want? I would pick Ty France. Wasn't his night. Ends up, you know, grounding out, I think.
Yeah,
first,
soft grounder.
Exactly. It wasn't your night. And that's, you know, sometimes that happens. Unfortunately for Seattle, that was like their big moment to get those runs. And Jake, you mentioned it. Once that happened, you were like, it's not happening.
It just felt like it was over. Exactly. This was their moment. This was their opportunity. I mean, 2 for 9 and with runners in scoring position last night. I mean, it's unfortunate. It really is. And it's hard when you get opportunities like that and you don't capitalize. The difference between so far what this group has done on a consistent basis or not done on a consistent basis is hit with runners in scoring position, not hit with runners in scoring position, I should say. Whereas the 2021 version of these Mariners, when they got off and they were winning games that they shouldn't have, and they're winning these close ball games, it's because they were more opportunistic. They were taking advantage of runners in scoring position.
And they were great yesterday. And honestly, Jake and Mike Lefko in for Curtis today, if you think about it, in the past 2 days, the Mariners have 18 hits, you know?
Uh-huh.
So if you think of it that way.
Sure.
Don't add context. Just
okay.
Leave it there.
You don't want me to add context at all?
I don't think context is necessary.
That's never important, right? You don't need context.
18 hits over the last
2 days. We'll just skew the stats to fit whatever narrative we want to build.
That's exactly right.
That's what we'll do, and that's okay. But
Excuse me, the one thing. 20 hits.
Oh.
20 hits.
That sounds even better.
Even more impressive.
Okay. So, but the problem is that your 20 hits did not come last night. You were looking at a really difficult spot, especially through 6 innings, where Yusei Kikuchi, who you gave up yeah, last year and were willing to part ways with, basically has an incredible outing through a no-hitter all the way through the 5th inning. And it's hard. It's hard to watch that. I didn't watch him last night. I don't know how you felt, Stacy. Mm-hmm. I didn't watch him last night and just feel regret or feel upset at the Mariners that, oh, how'd you let Yusei Kikuchi go? Mm-hmm. How could you do that? I didn't feel that way whatsoever. But it was frustrating to watch him, you know, throw it so good.
Yeah, well, it's frustrating because he wasn't like that consistently for you. The thing is, like, I've watched at T-Mobile Kikuchi take a no-hitter through the better part of five and then mm-hmm. completely fall apart. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think most Mariners fans watching this game last night were thinking, well, guess what, Blue Jays? Like, he's going to look fantastic through four, and then he'll slip up, there will be some kind of mistake, and it's just going to all collapse after that, because that had been kind of this weird trend of some of his starts. However, that didn't happen. He gave up just one base hit the entire night, six mm-hmm. scoreless, a fantastic game from Kikuchi. But I agree with you, because ultimately, we don't have the benefit of hindsight with that one game, and who knows what his season will bring. Maybe he'll be another all-star, but if you were to ask me at the time, so it would have been a week or two is the deadline after the World Series where you have to make that decision on that contract for Kikuchi. Mm-hmm. Should you pick up that extension or not? I would have said no. You were purposely moving the rotation around to take this guy out of it.
Yeah.
At the end of the year when you were trying to be your most competitive, your single all-star you could not have in your rotation for important games.
No, I 100%.
And you lost 3 of 4 in the final month for you.
Yeah, 100% agree. It was an epic collapse, right? And so when you see Yusei, you know, throw that way last night, that is peak Yusei. Yusei Kikuchi, if he's on, if he's feeling it and the confidence is there, he's one of the best left-handed pitchers in baseball. Mm-hmm. That's how good he is. But the thing that has always been his Achilles heel, as you outlined, Stacey, is his consistency and his ability to get himself out of jams. And when he is down and things aren't going well, then that's where you see Yusei really, really struggle. So, yeah, I mean, this is something that it's like with Blue Jay fans, hey, enjoy this incredible outing from Kikuchi, and you may get that for the first half of the season, but over the long haul, there are a lot of question marks, and I want to see how Kikuchi does over the course of the season, but I still feel like they made the right decision. They made the right call in letting him go. It's just very frustrating when you have an opportunity like that with a pitcher like Yusei Kikuchi. If you can get him out of rhythm, if you can put runners in traffic and create traffic on the bases, you will rattle him, and you'll be able to take advantage of some of the mistakes that he makes. But if you let him get into a rhythm and you let him strut off the mound like he did, you know, in the first, you know, couple innings, yeah, he's going to be dialed. And that's exactly what happened last night. And that was definitely disappointing. And it was disappointing to see the Mariners start to get runners in scoring position once he got out of the game and not be able to capitalize on it. That was truly unfortunate.
Adam in the 425 saying, let's not give him too much credit, guys. And he's right. He points out that there were a couple mistakes. A couple opportunities that Kikuchi gave hitters that the Mariners just couldn't take advantage of. It was still a solid outing by Kikuchi.
Sure, but when he only gives up one hit, I think, Adam, you allow him to have some credit, okay?
But what I would say, and I agree with you, what I would say is, despite Kikuchi's phenomenal performance, I found myself with two lingering thoughts after this game. I'm curious to see if you guys felt the same. The first was had nothing to do with Chris Flexen, who I agree with Scott Servais, had a great game, solid game. It was instead about the offense and how deflating it felt to go from that series against the Mets into this series and notch just 4 hits, 2 runs, not nearly enough to compete with Toronto, who we knew would be a contender, who, despite having an underperforming lineup, has a phenomenal lineup, a guy who led the league in hits last year, a guy who could have been MVP last, right? Like, they mm-hmm. have phenomenal players. And they're pushing for some serious contention. So it was always going to be tough. But I was still felt so deflated by the lack of offense. And I think one of the most frustrating things about it is the lack of consistency when it comes to that. And having one game where you get 16 hits paired with a game where you get 4 is just too
correct.
Perfectly reflective of the up and down moments of this very young ball club as they kind of try to find.
Right.
If you're going to, it's baseball.
Yeah.
It's 162 games. You're going to have up and downs, but the less wobbly and crazy you can make that roller coaster, like, those are where the best teams kind of live. Like,
mm-hmm.
you have more ups than downs, but more importantly, you aren't all over the place. You don't get shut out 5 times
correct.
In a season.
Or you feel like, for example, like last year, mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. Last year, the Yankees, they went on, I can't remember how far it extended, but it was a 10-plus losing streak. In the middle of the season, mm-hmm. not at the beginning, in the middle of the season, everybody thought, oh my gosh, the Yankees
like, Aaron Boone's going to get fired. fired.
Yeah, Aaron Boone's going to get fired. They are taking themselves out of playoff contention.
Were we all wrong about Aaron Judge?
And then they turn it
is
on.
He a bus?
They turn it on and they go on a 10-plus winning streak and they get themselves back into contention. They get themselves back into the playoffs. But the difference is that you felt like they had a lineup that could go off at any point.
That's the thing. The Astros this year winning 9 of 10 after having a kind of gross start to the season.
Yeah, but I don't look at our roster right now. I don't look at the lineup and go, oh boy, this group has got a ton of talent, a ton of, you know, run producing bats that all they got to do is just get hot and this thing's going to take off, right? It doesn't feel that way. And I know that Jesse Winker he's on an eight game hitting streak right now, but he's not slugging at a high rate. He's not driving in runs at a high rate. There's not really a run producer outside of Ty France right now that's doing it at a consistent basis. Suarez will contribute. He got a home run and he drove in an RBI. But, you know, it just is too few and far between, it feels like, for him. There's not enough run-producing bats in this lineup right now that make me feel genuinely excited or feel like, man, if this group just gets hot, this thing's going to explode.
You're okay with small ball if there's a couple guys doing
correct.
It. It's less so. It's like, if I'm going to have three hitters, let's hope they're all power hitters, and no matter what, they're driving in runs or they're getting a home run. Like, guys getting on base, but then having no cleanup hitters and having no one who can really drive them in is where you get, you know, 1-for-7 with runners in scoring position or whatever it is.
Correct. I mean, that's where you got Mitch Haniger and Kyle Seager last year who – you know, for whatever their flaws were, I mean, Mitch had an outstanding season last year, but he had 37 home runs, Kyle Seager over 100 RBIs. I mean, they were driving in runs, and that's the big difference here with this lineup right now is they need guys that are going to produce runs with their bats.
So the first lingering thought was the inconsistency of the offense, and that goes hand in hand with a young ball club, but also, like, when is it going to level out? What's it going to take to level out? And will we see that this year? The second lingering thought was exactly what you said, which is that I didn't regret Kikuchi moving on, but rather it made me think of Chris Taylor in a little way, even though Kikuchi clearly wasn't traded. He signed with Toronto as a free agent when the Mariners decided to move on. But rather, I was looking at it thinking, I want to get to a point where I feel like the Mariners are making good decisions and the Mariners left on the roster are the right Mariners. And I feel better about the roster than I do with the ex-Mariners off of it. Mm. Like, I'm so over. was it last year's Home Run Derby? Do you guys remember?
Point.
Or the year prior when it was like, it felt like there were like five former Mariners there or the All-Star Game. And you're thinking like, great, cool, awesome. Not the Home Run Derby, the All-Star Game.
Yeah, that was last year.
Yeah. And you're just like, I would love to get to a point where I'm thinking, yeah, you know, like, I'm okay with someone like Zunino not being on this roster because, man, like, Torrens is raking or, like, Raleigh is raking. It doesn't even have to be Raleigh. It could just be, like, I love this roster and I feel good for these guys being off of it, fine, but, like, I'm happy with where they are. And I'm getting there, but I can't wait to graduate to that moment because I never want to have that, like, Chris Taylor feeling of like watching your ex thrive and date a supermodel and you can't even say anything. You can't even say they downgraded. And like Chris Taylor moved on with the Dodgers.
And you're floundering. You're struggling to move on, right? And I think that for the Mariners, they are at this point where you can feel that they are close. You can feel like there is potential here. But as I've said before, if you don't have bats that can drive in runs, then you're going to be hot and cold. You're going to have major peaks and valleys. You're going to be in a position where if you don't play small ball incredibly well, I mean, you're going to go through some tough droughts. And unfortunately, that's kind of where you're at with your lineup right now. And hopefully you can find, someone to step up in their absence. I mean, you know, Jesse Winker getting, you know, having a 7-game hitting streak is a nice change. Now, can he drive in runs? Julio Rodriguez, as he's getting more and more comfortable, can he drive more runs? I mean, that is something that as you're looking through in these series, going up against these playoff caliber teams, they've got to be able to match that. And that's, you know, ultimately why they were able to win that final game against the Mets, that 8-7 win.
It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrite.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacy.
Well, ex-Mariners All-Star Yusei Kikuchi pitched six scoreless against Seattle yesterday, allowed just one hit. What's the real headline?
If only the Mariners could have had this version of Kikuchi when they needed him most.
No kidding. No kidding. I mean, honestly, no, it doesn't. It shouldn't happen, Stacy. Think about if Yusei Kikuchi had pitched like this in the second half of the season. They'd be in the playoffs. They would have ended the drought.
Yeah, because in his four
so incredibly
starts,
frustrating.
He had three losses. I need to double check. I think in September he was.
Oh, it was brutal.
One of four.
Well, it was brutal.
And the controversial thing happened at the end of the year when they skipped his start.
Yes.
And the final game of the year went to Tyler Anderson.
Yep. And that's how bad it got. They didn't even trust him to pitch in that final game, right? And this is a guy who made the All-Star team last year, right? He was your representative in the All-Star game. And that is that's the frustrating aspect of Yusei Kikuchi that you hope the Toronto Blue Jays feel every bit of, right? That they feel the instability and the up-and-down performances because it is incredibly frustrating because Yusei Kikuchi is somebody that you really want to root for. He's somebody that you wanted to see do good here with the Mariners but could just never really put it together. And, you know, you saw why, you know, he has the unbelievable talent and ceiling, but just nowhere near the consistency, and I think that that trend will continue in Toronto.
Headline Rewrite.
Well, Browns quarterback Deshaun Watson is set to meet with the NFL today. What's the real headline?
Using a familiar form of communication, Watson himself scheduled the meeting through Instagram. That's what you don't know, is it's a little known fact, is Watson reached out, just a quick DM to the NFL.
I thought people around him would tell him to stop communicating.
Yeah, no, he's still, it's and just engaging kind of the preferred method now. Preferred method.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. It just makes me, it makes me feel very uncomfortable, Stacey. This headline makes me feel very uncomfortable.
My headline rewrite or the...
Yeah, yeah. Your headline rewrite. It's very on the nose here. Now, with Deshaun Watson meeting the NFL, I wonder what's going to happen with this. Is there going to be a suspension of any kind, right? After this meeting and after they have gathered the information, or are they going to give Deshaun Watson the A-OK? I mean, this is not something that, you know, in the past, they have not needed a conviction or anything like that to enforce their personal conduct policy. So I will be very curious to see how they use it, if they use it at all in Deshaun Watson's case. I mean, the NFL is so up and down. There's no predictability in terms of how they handle it, which is part of the problem, to be honest with you, is there's no consistency whatsoever. And so you have no clue what to expect here. I mean, you could see no suspension, a one-game suspension, six-game suspension. Who knows? Who knows what they're going to do?
Headline Rewrite.
Well, Houston businessman James McInvale, a.k.a. Mattress Mac, down $4 million in two separate bets on the Astros to win the World Series. What's the real headline?
Said Phil Mickelson, don't. Don't do it. Phil Mickelson, as we know, what did he, was it 40 million or four? Is that 40 the number I'm remembering correctly? 40 million over 4 years in gambling losses from 2012 to 16. So.
Yeah, 40 million.
Man, Phil Mickelson, by the way.
Well, Charles Barkley probably scoffs at that anyway.
That's exactly right.
Michael Jordan, too, if anybody really knew the debts that he, or the gambling losses that he has had.
I don't know what you're talking about. Phil Mickelson over the last year, the weirdest fall from grace.
Yes, 100%, yeah. And it was all because he said that he was considering doing the Saudi tour, right? Like,
no, it's a couple things. It was that, it was the unauthorized biography that came out about him that had some quotes that weren't especially flattering. Although I haven't read it, but all the reviews I've seen about it are like, it's a great read. It's just a very honest portrayal of someone. And I think that sometimes when you have people in autobiography, like, you're going to get the very best version. And sometimes the best reads are a third party, which is what this was. But it's interesting. I should note Phil Mickelson was not like a defendant in that gambling lawsuit.
Uh-huh.
He was just named in it.
Yeah.
I think a relief dependent or something.
Correct.
There aren't charges against you, but you're testifying.
But they had to look at your books. Yeah. They had to go into discovery on this and found some interesting stuff. But I think that when you're looking at, Mattress Mac, this is one of the weirdest human beings I've ever witnessed. He's just throwing down bets nonstop in the most shady way possible, and everyone knows it, and yet everyone covers it. Like, we're talking about it. Like, this guy he continues to win with this type of press. It's unbelievable.
Well, he bet on your team, the Jayhawks, so he won with them. He has had some wild bets.
Which is smart bet on his part.
How about the, what did he do, $9.5 million on the Bengals to win the Super Bowl?
It's nuts.
Yeah, the Jerry Jones of just mattress salesmen. If you guys have never seen him, that's what he reminds me of.
He looks
like Jerry Jones.
I mean, but how does he do this? Like, he bets big, and he's won big. Like, that's the crazy part. He's won big.
Scared money don't make money.
That's true. Amen.
And his mattresses must be expensive.
Have to be, right? Have to be.
So again, as a reminder for you guys, we're going to have the dugout coming up here from 1 to 2. Scott Servais going to kick that off with us. We're going to ask him about that series against the Mets, take a look back, and then obviously that less than stellar opening in that series against Toronto. We have more Mariners discussions coming up a bit later. We're also going to have Rob Staton up to talk Seahawks draft. Rob Staton, someone that every time we have him on, if you don't know who he is, he's the only guest we have that's British, so you'll recognize the British accent. Every time we have him on, people are like, can you get Rob back? He's so great. Can you book Rob again? So, yes,
we
booked Rob again. He's awesome. He's just completely unfiltered, and he knows a ton about the draft and about prospects, so he has plenty to say about this new draft class. Before we get to that, though, I'm going to stick with Mariners for a minute, because earlier this morning, Jake, you didn't hear it. Earlier this morning, I heard a stat about the Mariners that absolutely blew my mind. Blew my mind. And it got me thinking about a trend that needs to change. So how do they do it? That's next.
Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle's Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Coming up in 15 minutes, I want to talk about the Seahawks position groups that have you pumped up and then the ones that have you panicking. But before that, I got to talk about the Mariners offense, which might have you panicking. Or if you're an optimist and you love what you've seen from Julio, it may have you pumped up. Who knows? But one thing that's clear is that it's been inconsistent. In fact, Mike Lefko filling in for Curtis Rogers today. You guys will know him from Wyman and Bob. Hi, Mike.
Oh, what is this show? Sorry, am I here too early?
Yeah, you actually are here way too early. We didn't correct you because we need
Mike,
some help today, so we just didn't say anything.
Exactly. This is super awkward.
This is very awkward.
This is more awkward than yesterday when I asked George Kirby about his brother, and he told me he didn't have a brother.
Ooh, I don't know about that, Stacey. You probably took that one step too far.
Has anything you've ever done been more awkward than that? Have you ever felt more physically uncomfortable than you did in that moment?
Oh, you know, I don't know. I don't think that there has been anything more physically uncomfortable for me. Because
one time I accidentally broke into another car.
The other part was I didn't know what you were going to do. I genuinely thought that once that happened, that you would have just been like, oh, okay, well, next question. But you looked at me like,
what do I do?
Did you say, are you sure?
Help me.
I should have. Are you positive? Because I'm reading here that you have a brother. Are you sure that the words in front of my face?
Oh, my gosh. It was so funny.
That was unfortunate.
It was hilarious. So then I sit there, right? And we're both physically uncomfortable. All three of us are physically uncomfortable.
Well,
what do we do here?
So he's cool, right? So he's like over it. He's not uncomfortable at all. But then it makes you more uncomfortable, like how high schoolers scare you.
And I was trying to get to my next question, but I could not.
No, you just started laughing.
I couldn't help myself.
You just started laughing.
But, Stacey, look, I am here for you.
No, you.
I am here for you. I'm totally here for you. And we're going to have a great show today. We had some time to, recharge our batteries, to get ourselves right, to make sure that we're not asking people about brothers they don't have.
Okay.
Like, we're ready to go.
Stacey, you got to have your coffee extra early this morning.
I did, actually. I have
two coffees
in front of me.
That's
great. One hot, one cold. I take a drink of the hot coffee and I chase it with the iced coffee. I say this because, Lefko, congratulations. You accidentally being here early and producing our show is not the most awkward thing to happen in the last 24 hours. You did, though, tell me something really interesting while we were prepping this morning, which is that the Mariners have not won back-to-back games, Jake, since April 24th and 26th, which was the home finale versus KC and then the road opener versus the Rays. April 24th,
I don't like that.
Prior to the NFL draft. Like, since then, not only are there new Seahawks, but, like, my tabs have expired. Like, we are in, like, a new month.
I need to get my license renewed.
Mental note.
Yeah.
Lefko, please remind us, two adults, to take care of these basic tasks.
Took care of your things and your daily tasks, the Mariners would win back-to-back games.
Or how about the Mariners take care of their tasks and build on some of the momentum that they have been able to create? I mean,
they're not winning back-to-back until I renew my tabs.
You better do it today.
It's unbelievable.
Start the win streak.
Yeah, come on. This is like Slipknot all over again. The Slipknot T-shirt.
Yeah.
And JP's home runs. You know, this is something that I don't know quite what to make of it, to be honest with you. But other than the fact that the one thing that you could point to is the up and down nature of this lineup.
Right.
Right? The inconsistencies of this lineup. And when you do not have a group that can consistently drive in runs, right? And you don't have somebody like that is consistent, that is, you know, maximizing runners in scoring position, you're gonna falter. And then one of the other things that you point out is, and that we've talked about before, especially with Jared Kelnick when he was up, and it still is true with the lineup that you have. But let's go back and let's look at the New York Mets game, this last game. They go 8-7. Okay, their winning record. Okay, I haven't checked back in with the stats whiz of Alex Mayer, but the last time I checked with him, when the second half or the bottom half of the lineup, 6 through 9, contributes with an RBI, their win percentage is unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Like over 600.
Over 600.
Wow.
When they do not produce an RBI, the team really falters. And that to me is kind of the volatility that you have with your lineup right now. If the top half of your lineup isn't dominating, isn't driving in RBIs, isn't, you know, producing with home runs, then you're not going to be able to play small ball very well if 6 through 9 are not consistently contributing. And against the Mets, guess what? They did. Abraham Toro, 2 of 3 with an RBI. You had Souza, who was 1 for 4. You had Cal Raleigh, 1 for 4, and he drove in 2 RBIs. Like, when you have that group able to get on base, able to put traffic on base, or at least drive in runs and contribute, that's when you see this team actually function well and move well as a lineup. But it, right now, there's just too much of a hot and cold nature to this thing for it to be stable and consistent.
Yeah, and I think that was the gamble. I keep saying this. I know it's annoying, but the gamble that they were always going to make heading into the season is the less stacked your lineup is, the more holes you're going to have. And they've had that, and it hasn't helped that they've had a number of injuries.
Bless you.
Thank you. another thing that we wanted to talk about is, like, okay, let's say you can get it going. I would have looked at this series against the Mets as, can you carry momentum into this series against the Blue Jays? You have not been able to. Granted, that's also a weird trend with Chris Flexen's games. So let's say that maybe that is just bad luck and you can keep it going. Is there such a thing as carrying momentum in baseball?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, how do you carry momentum from, like, giving the Mets, at that point, the best team in the NL, their first series loss of the year? They had gone 10 consecutive series to open the season without losing a series.
Mm-hmm.
You gave them that at home. How do you carry that momentum into another road series against another tough team?
Well, I genuinely just believe that a lot of it comes down to the fact that the guys that you're asking to be run producers, they need to be the ones that are catching fire, that they are the ones that are being consistent. And right now, you look at Ty France and J.P. Crawford, and those are the two guys. Julio Rodriguez, you add him to the mix and how he's played over the last 20 games. You certainly add Julio. But those three guys are the ones that are playing the most consistent ball for you. The problem is, as we've highlighted before, is that these guys aren't necessarily power hitters, right? Ty France has the ability to hit for power, and he's the one that he's your RBI leader right now. But he is a pure hitter, on-base guy, and can get hot with his bat and drive in home runs like we saw earlier in the season with you know, the first homestand. And J.P. Crawford is not going to be, you know, a true home run power hitter throughout the season. And so Julio will get there eventually, but he's a youngster. He's trying to figure it out, and he's he's finding his role and trying to, you know, do the best that he can at the current moment and not try to do too much. And that's exactly where I want him to be. But right now, you do not have that consistent power hitter, and that to me is the biggest problem. And those guys are not, you know, carrying that momentum. When you were in the homestand and you had the – remember, it feels like a year ago already. You remember the electric factory? You remember that?
Do I remember
the electric
factory?
At one point in time, we had a week where T-Mobile Park was the electric factory, people, okay? You were having people consistently, you know, driving in runs, producing power, and that was the big difference with this offense, right? Adam Frazier also being a part of that. So that to me is really the most simple way that I can look at this lineup and say, why is there not more momentum? Why is there not more consistency with this lineup? And I think that's really it. You're missing a Mitch Haniger. You're missing, that type of bat that can get hot for you and can consistently produce runs over a stretch of games.
Lefko was a very cool but depressing stat. Thank you for finding that. Again, that being the Mariners haven't won back-to-back games since April 24th and 26th. Also pointing out that some of their worst games have come after some of their biggest wins, that being Kirby's debut. The next night was that loss to the Phillies that we shall not ever speak of again. And then that win over the Mets to win the series, and then the loss last night. So, which didn't hurt as much as the loss to the Phillies, but still not great. So good stuff, Lefko. The question I had at the end of it, which is like, hey, it's a trend that needs to change. How do they do it? That's what we're going to discuss in the dugout today when we have on Gary Hill and when we have on Shannon is going to be like, okay, so let's take this information we have. How do you move it forward?
Right.
What do they do? How can you fix it? How can you get right?
We will get to the bottom of it, people.
Don't worry. We will solve the Mariners' offense today between the hours of 1 p.m. and 2 p.m. right here on Seattle Sports Station. Don't forget to tune in to the dugout where we solve everything about the Mariners. So that's coming up. It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 in the Seattle Sports app. The Seahawks roster has mostly taken shape. The depth is going to be sorted out in training camp, but we know for the most part who's fighting which battles. So which position group has you pumped up for the season and which has you panicking? That's next.
Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Don't mind me, Jake. I'm just over here ordering some more parts of my gift for Willa as we have our competing gifts for her first birthday. And it's continuing to grow and evolve into the best gift any one-year-old has ever received, ever.
Out of competitiveness, okay?
Yes. Because I love Willa.
We have Stacey's gambling debts, okay?
Those debts have been paid.
Okay, they have all been paid. You're right. But you continue to keep making bets no matter how bad they are.
Thrill of the bet.
Yes. But also, we have revealed your competitiveness in terms of Willa, Curtis's daughter, is turning 1 year
exactly
old.
Right.
We're going to have a party.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting gifts, right?
Right.
And Stacey is determined to get a better gift than me to Willa.
Not a better gift, just a bigger one.
Okay. All right. I feel good about the gift that we're giving, the Heaps are giving to the Rodgers.
Yeah.
But Stacey seems to be adding one more thing each day, it feels like. I feel like you are amassing a lot of debt that you can't pay off.
No.
Ensure that you win over a one-year-old.
No. Okay.
Who won't remember the gift?
No, she will. Right. I don't need to win Willa over. What I think, though, is should we present her the gifts at the same time and see which one she walks to first? I don't know. It's not my baby. I don't make those decisions. But if we were to do that, that's insanely competitive. We're not crazy.
Mm.
I'm feeling good about my odds.
Okay. All right. I would just say that at 1 year old, okay, that it is more about you could either go the entertainment route or you could get a gift that the parents will enjoy that also will be practical for Willa. So, you know, you could go either route.
Oh, I see what you did. Mm-hmm. I can see that. So you're trying to win over Brenna and Curtis. My gift is
I'm just saying there's two
the
different
child.
Routes here that you could go that could
okay.
get you brownie points.
I'll be fine.
Okay.
The Seahawks have pretty much every player that they're going to have on the roster. They're going to continue to add, going to continue, I'm sure, to make some random trades. But for the most part, the roster has taken shape. What we don't know is who's won which position battles. Those still have to be figured out. But I wanted to talk about position groups in general. What position group are you pumped up about? And which are you panicking about?
So
if you want to send yours in, 206-421-3776.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear what the texters have to say about this.
Well, why don't you go first? I'll read some
texters. You're going to go first.
Why don't I go first?
You're going to go first, and you are going to tell us. Let's go. Great. How do you want to do this? You want to go optimistic? You want to go what you're pumped up about first?
I'm going to go pumped up first.
Okay.
And panicking second.
All right. Who are you pumped up about?
So it's easy to say wide receivers here. It's easy to say safeties here because if you were looking at the best, most stacked positions or the surest positions, it would be wide receiver and safety. However, I went with intrigue.
Okay.
Intrigue. I am eager to see running backs. I am eager to see in this offense without Russell Wilson whether Rashad Penny, who was a bust for the better part of 4 years before becoming the best, underscore, bold emphasis, best running back in football for a month. Like, the juxtaposition between those two things cannot be stressed. I'm very eager to see whether he can repeat that success, whether he can stay healthy, if there's something that changed in him, his mentality, his approach physically that he can duplicate and try to do again, or, you know, maybe he just got lucky. But I'm incredibly eager to see what happens because it was him and Jonathan Taylor at the end of the month.
Yeah, it was. And honestly, it wasn't even close.
No.
It was Rashad Penny. Then Jonathan Taylor.
And it wasn't even like, oh, he's the best because he has... he had 170 yards against Detroit. And I thought, you know what? If he can get over 100, that'll be great. There's no way he's getting over 170. Just kidding. He got 190 the next week. That's those are insane numbers. Insane numbers. So I'm curious to see what he's going to look like. Also, I am obviously very, very eager to see what Ken Walker is going to look like, given how much Brock Heward has raved about him.
It's his explosion. Wait till you see this guy. His legs are ginormous. He ran 4.38 at the combine. That's the combine's usually your slowest time that you run. It's not handheld, right? It's electronic. You've got to be efficient. Every inch matters. And he ran 4.38 at that kind of just muscle ball. And then it's his short area quickness. He can make moves. He's like a boxer where he can make two or three combinations. He's not just a one-cut guy. He's a one-cut with wiggle. And all of a sudden, in the hole, right, he can shimmy, and he could just explode.
There's no player Brock Heward spoke more highly about post-draft than Ken Walker. As far as panicking, I'm going to stick with corner. Now, I'm excited about the pieces that they've added. I'm excited about Kobe Bryant. Eager to see Trey Brown get back and get healthy, okay? So I'm not necessarily panicking long-term, but if there was a game played tomorrow against a team that had a stacked wide receiver group and a quarterback with a big arm, I'd be very nervous.
Why?
Because there's no proven part of your cornerback group. There's a lot of intrigue, a lot of excitement, no proven part. Ironically, you could say the same about the running backs, but I feel
What are you talking
nervous.
About? Trey Brown, he played great for four games. He played great for four games.
I think
Sidney Jones, he came alive the last six games, Stacey.
We talked with Kobe Bryant. I love his attitude. I love his confidence. I love what he can bring. I'm eager to see it. That group still has me nervous until they prove otherwise.
Stacey, you're sleeping on Artie Burns. He came alive last season. Came alive.
I was looking at a picture of a draft picture I took from the Seahawks draft room for the media, obviously not their war room. And did you know Artie Burns was drafted one spot ahead of Jermaine Ifedi? I'd forgotten that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy,
I was looking at that picture, and I was like, oh, my God, they ended up...
Yeah, and I played with Artie at Miami. Very, very talented, long, lengthy corner, and just, you know, has not been able to put together a consistent career, but he did have a good year, a solid year, his best year in Chicago last year. Now, it wasn't, you know, all-pro level, but it was a better year. And so it'll be interesting to see him come over here to Seattle, obviously with Sean Desai. But I think that you highlighted this group very, very well, Stacey, in terms of the group that you should have a little bit of panic about and you kind of reminiscent of last year. Now, I believe there's more talent in this group than there was a year ago, and certainly more things to be excited about, and the competition should be better. But, yeah, this is a group that you do worry about. I mean, I love the way you put it. If you're talking about playing tomorrow, and luckily they don't, but, you know, they're playing the Denver Broncos, and they've got Cortland Sutton and Tim Patrick and Jerry Jeudy and at a very good receiving core, or you know, you look at the Rams or you know any of these other teams that have a good receiving core, like you're going to be a little worried about how they match up. So I definitely agree with you, and the running backs, two home run hitting guys that can really make a difference.
Now, interestingly enough, when it comes to listeners on the Mac and Jack's text line 206-421-3776, most common response we're worried about is running backs, pumped up linebackers, worried about offensive line, pumped up about linebackers from a separate texter. So I did not expect linebackers, also D-line, get someone else most pumped up. Overall, kind of, I think the running back group, given the health especially, has some people panicking. But we're going to hear yours in an hour. Before that, we're going to bring on Rob Staton again. He is a favorite of so many people. If you haven't heard him yet, I promise, even if you disagree with him on some things, you're going to love him. Not only because he has a very easy-to-listen-to British accent, and you'll find yourself repeating words like a jerk, at least I do, but also he has great stuff to say. He has some really, really fascinating stuff to say about the prospects heading into the draft. Let's see what he has to think about the prospects Seattle actually chose. That's next.